This is A View from the Bridge, unofficial Belfast Giants podcast for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today's the 16th of August. My name's Patrick Smith.
How's it going? I'm Connor Caldwell. You're very welcome to our second duo podcast of the pre-season here. Coming up to you a crucial time in the Giants' preparation for the season with the Hockey Fest happening next week, and we're going to talk about that a bit later on with Patrick.
Duo podcast? I like that.
As opposed to your solo efforts with people. See, Paddy doesn't let me into the podcast with famous people. He sort of thinks I'm too much of a liability, so he goes and does the interviews with the coach and his mate Doug. You know, he says, "What about you, Doug?" And Doug says, "Oh, Patrick, what about you?" You know,
inner circle. You know, I've just bypassed the comment "solo effort," which I know that somewhere in the world, Squeaker's having a night chuckle. Here on A View from the Bridge, we try to bring you all the news and views of the Stena Line Belfast Giants and the Elite Ice Hockey League. It's been, we had the interview last week with Doug, which he was very frank, I have to say. He didn't hold back on some of the info he was giving us and some of his thought patterns on how he put the team together, which was good to hear.
Of course, yeah, and he's been kind enough to offer to come back on the show quite regularly through the season, which is nice, you know, to keep in touch with the fans, I suppose, and to let us know what he's thinking. So maybe that's something we can develop over the course of the next few weeks, is people can email us questions to put to Doug, and maybe we can put those to the coach on all of your behalf.
Yeah, sounds good. How's things with yourself, mate? Well, how are you keeping?
Oh, doing rightly, yeah. We managed to actually catch up in person for the first time there in quite a few months at the weekend.
Yeah.
One of your increasingly rare trips home.
Yeah, well, we're... Oh, yeah, sorry, I might have been a bit drunk. An interesting flight home for a wedding. It was good. No, we're looking forward to the season coming up. And last time we spoke, when it came to the Belfast Giants, about the Brits and about the returning British players and the new British players we have. I think this time around, it's only fair we chat about the imports, considering that in the last week the Giants have completed their roster, bringing in surprisingly two imports. When last week I spoke to Doug Christensen on the interview, we were only talking about what I believed at that time to only be one additional import, and turned out to be two. But we'll come to that in a second. I think the best place to start is with the only returning import from last season, which turned out there were quite a few standout players last season, despite the outcomes. But Jeff Mason is the only guy to come back with.
He is indeed the number three for the Giants. He had a good season, like you say, for us last year. He scores a lot of points from defense, which is always welcome. But apart from that, you know, he stands up well and he leads the line in defence very well, which is obviously why Doug has asked him back. You know, it's a shame not to see some of the other defencemen from last year making a return. I think we'd grown accustomed to a few of their faces. But, you know, he has a history of getting big points. And those are the sort of D-men, actually, which Giant fans tend to like. You know, think back to famous Giant or well-liked Giants defenseman, and I suppose one of the ones that jumps out is Robbie Sandrock, and maybe Mason's not quite in that mold, but he certainly does put the points up. I think he had 32, or certainly in the low 30s last season. So good to have him back. And strange as well for the Giants to turn over almost the entire roster. Really, it's the biggest clearer I can remember in recent times.
Yeah. It's no disrespect to Mason, who I think is a great player, and I'm pleased to see him return. I am surprised he's the only returnee. I don't know whether that is through, you know, I think Doug said last week that you look at the players you want to return, and I don't know whether it's through players wanting more money, or whether there was a need to change the system, or, But Mason was a standout player last season when it came to defence, and he is a guy who maybe didn't quarterback the power play as much as maybe he could have done coming in from defence. But I think that the way the team's set up this season, he won't have to. It will be good to have a guy of his offensive ability putting points on the board, especially considering some of the other imports we've taken on. One of which would be Daryl Lloyd, somebody that Doug brought up last week as being the type of player that everybody hates, except when he's playing for your team.
Well, that's it. Does seem to be one of those niggly type of players, just having a look through his career history. He tends to rack up serious amount of penalty minutes, but at the same time is an excellent contributor on the offensive side of things. He's playing last season for Kalamazoo in the ECHL, and he's consistently over the last couple of years, although last year was probably his best season in the ECHL, but he's consistently now putting up good points for someone that also is a niggly type of player. And I think he'll be probably someone that the Giants fans grew to like very quickly. Mm-hmm. Obviously the most famous player in that sort of mode would have been Shane Johnson, who was the previous player that everyone in the league hated to play against. So if he can do half as well as Shane, he'll have a great season.
The one notable thing about Lloyd is the fact that a couple of seasons ago he played alongside Corey Carlander at Kalamazoo. You always wonder if these sort of things influence players when they, you know, if the Giants come in to speak to, you know, to find these players and to chat to them about coming across the Atlantic to play in Belfast, or where do these players go and chat to other players they know who have played in Belfast and get good reviews from them? It is interesting to see that Carlanders are again one of the original Giants team and one of the great members of the Giants in their history.
Indeed, he was, yeah, great centreman in his day, and a guy who certainly knew how to find the back of the net. And it's difficult. I suppose what you're saying about, players have to do their scouting on where they're going to go as much as the coaches are going to scout the players. Mm-hmm. Because I'm quite sure that a player who puts up consistent numbers in the ECHL, like Daryl Lloyd has done over the past couple of seasons, will have had multiple offers. And you know, the scouting networks can't really be that diverse between EHL clubs that that they're all looking at different players. There has to be a certain type of player who's available that mm-hmm. that they're all looking at. And you actually do hear that a lot from the North American players that come over. They say, I heard that Belfast is a dangerous place to be, but then I talked to so-and-so and they said, oh, no, that's all, you know, that's all nonsense. You know, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. You know, I think I remember hearing that quite a lot from players that have come over recently. So, perhaps Corey had a word in his ear, as they say. Definitely someone that should come over to the Giants fans very, very quickly. And I wouldn't be surprised to see his jersey sponsored in the next week or so.
Looking back at defence, one of the more experienced members of the team is Jeremy Rebeck, I'm sure we'll find out soon enough. A guy who's had a glittering career across Europe, but most notably in the Austrian League, where only a couple of seasons ago we earned most points by a defenseman. I think that this is a player who might be one of the contenders for team captain. And one that I'm quite looking forward to seeing myself, considering the career he's had.
Yeah, and I think he was the assistant captain on the Austrian national team in one of the world championships that they were in. Mm-hmm. He's certainly in the autumn of his career at the minute, but still seems to be able to affect the game as much as someone half his age. He's spent most of the last decade in Austria playing with various teams and lighting it up, as they say. I think last season, again, he had 34 points in 51 games. Mm-hmm. His penalty minutes shot up last year compared to previous seasons, which is something maybe you have to watch out for in the coming season. But again, like the Giants, a lot of the defensemen seem to be guys who can do a job on both sides of the red line. And he's, like you say, definitely someone who you would think would be a front runner for the C. Mm-hmm. So, it'll be good to see him. It's interesting as well, just while we talk about Rebic, there's quite a few players who have come over from Europe this year, mm-hmm. As opposed to previous years. And one other player that's come over from Austria is Nick Cooper, I assume that's how you pronounce it.
Kuiper, I think maybe it is.
Kuiper, yeah. Mm. Who's another player that well, sort of to the maybe the bottom end in terms of production of the imports, but someone who will maybe look to have a jump in production in his stats this season.
Yeah. Looking at his stats, I think looking at his the photo they've put on the Belfast Giants website for him, he looks like one bad motherfather.
But it's sort of like a picture of Kane from the WWF, you know.
But look at his stats, the games played in regards to points. It's you know, he looks like one of the top physical, you know, stay-at-home defensemen that will be shoved right in front of Stephen Murphy's net and hopefully one that'll keep the shots on goal down. Again, you're absolutely right. He's had quite the career around Europe, not least as playing in the Swedish Elite League, which is a very high honour to have. And then, like Rebek, he's been playing in Austria for the last couple of years.
Yeah, and two, one thing that jumps out from his stat sheet really is two significant seasons in the AHL, mm-hmm. Where he played the entire season. And I think experience goes a long way in this league. Like if you do have, like as we've seen with a lot of the elite players that have played in this league, the likes of Tony Hand, the likes of Ed Courtney, Theo Fleury, those people that can think a bit faster than other players in this league, you don't necessarily have to be able to skate faster than them or hit harder than them. But those who can think that little bit quicker tend to do very, very well in our division. And he just looks exactly like that sort of person who will fit that mould. You can't teach experience. And another player who will Giants be looking to have a huge year.
Tom Dignard is also in defence, and he's only had a couple of seasons, a few seasons as full pro, having come out of Yale University. I don't know what to expect from this guy. He's quite young. 5'11", shoots left. He's according to Doug Christensen, he's expecting Tom to be a great asset in all three zones and be able to join the play to add offence to the team. Looking at the other teams, it'll be very important to have a great skating D-man in order to compete on a nightly basis. What do you think, mate?
Yeah, it's difficult to know. Like you say, I mean, college stats are all well and good, but this is a whole different game. But the fact that he has been up and down to the AHL from the Canadian League, it obviously goes to show that he has the qualities that the scouts at that level are looking for. And fair enough, he only really got a cup of coffee, as they say, last year up with Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. But these are the sort of players that sometimes there can be various reasons why a good hockey player can fall to our league. It could be his personal makeup. It could be that maybe they think he's played too much hockey and he doesn't have enough upside for them to invest money in him. But again, this is one of the more obvious gambles by Doug Christensen. But I mean, his production has been excellent with Tulsa last year. He's about a point every game and a half. Doesn't take very many penalties, and I'll be looking forward to seeing him. But like again, maybe one of the biggest gamble on the roster.
Well, there's one other D-man to talk about, but I'm actually going to save that right to the very end because it brings up another talking point on top of that. So, looking at the forwards, you can go a long way when you bring in a player who scored 110 points last season in the Elite League in John Pelly. 55 goals, 55 assists. That was one of the standout signings, I think, when it came to the summer.
Yeah, and what a name as well.
Pelly!
It's one of those signings sometimes you wonder, did Doug just maybe try to buy this player because he ruined us last season? And you know, anytime you have an opportunity to buy a player who does well against you, and at this level, it's maybe a good idea to get him out of the way of or out of Cardiff's grasp. Mm-hmm. An outstanding season last year, one of the great seasons in the history of the Cardiff Devils, and excellent to have him to lead the line because we do have a lot of points to replace with Colin Shields leaving and the various other import forwards that aren't around for this season. So I'm not expecting him to in our roster to go past 100 points this season because we probably have slightly more talent spread around the first and second line, so he won't be so much of a go-to guy as he was last year with Cardiff. So, but you know, nevertheless, if he gets in around 85 to 90, it'll represent a fantastic haul. And yeah, I mean, probably the player I'm most excited about seeing in Giants colours this year.
I was absolutely astounded when Pele came back to came back to the Elite League for a start. A guy of that points production to remain in the Elite League is an achievement as it is, because I was certain he was bound to be picked up by one of the other top leagues in Europe with that sort of production.
But the only thing in that regard is he is quite lightweight compared to a lot of other forwards, and maybe that's something that stands against him. And I know we've said the same thing about Craig Peacock, who's in the same situation. He's very small, and once you get out into the European leagues and you're facing bigger defensemen, it becomes a lot more difficult to play that free flowing offensive style of hockey.
Yeah.
So no, it's possible. Like I think as well, maybe teams don't want to take a gamble on someone who maybe has a huge spike in their career numbers. There could be all sorts of reasons for that.
Very true.
And you know, it was a huge spike in his career numbers. I mean, he played
over double.
Yeah, over double. I mean, he did play significantly more games than he'd ever done in his career before. And to me, it would be quite unusual for a player. You know, he's coming in now to be a fifth year pro. To me, it would be quite unusual to see someone spike that much, but just basically overnight. So I suppose the European teams don't want to take a risk on a lightweight guy who maybe just, you know, obviously it's not just luck that propelled him to those sort of points. He's obviously been working very hard on his game. But I think, obviously, if he has anything close to that again this year for the Giants, there'd be no way he could stay in the Elite League. He'd be heading off.
Gone. Yeah, absolutely. Derek LeBlanc, moving straight on through the forwards, is a guy who's come in from the CHL and the Rapid City Rush, a guy who played the wing or in centre. He's also played that at an AHL level. Decent enough numbers, just looking through it. AHL level, he played 11 games with just an assist to his name and 2 minutes on the board, so you can't really judge anything there. But again, another one of these forwards that it'd be interesting to see where he was scouted from and, you know, what information was put forward. Because according to information from Christensen, he was one of the fastest members in the team, which, given his 6'2" status, bodes quite well.
It does, yeah. And I think generally you can see quite a carryover in between the numbers from, like, the CHL and into our league. They tend to be fairly accurate. I think maybe at times some of the players in our league can be a slightly higher standard than that particular division, but if he carries over that sort of production, which I think I had a look at it there, it's about 0.8 points a game, which is dead on. And if he can bring that over into our league, I mean, he's obviously a good passer of the puck. His assist points are they're pretty high each season. He's more of a goal scorer, I think, but he obviously brings other players into the game, and yeah, he's quite an experienced player as well. He's played a lot of hockey already at this stage. His record would seem to indicate that he doesn't wear down either, which is something Giants fans should be looking for in these players. So, what players are able to withstand an entire season? And he's got quite a lot of 60-plus game seasons already under his belt, which is something that should really stand him in good stead for the way the hockey goes in our league.
Speaking of, as we spoke earlier about players that have come straight in from Europe, as you brought up, another one that's done that is Benoit Duchet. I think that's how it's said. We'll see when the season starts, but I suppose he comes from
Quebec. We'll wait to see what Graham says, and then just follow that.
Basically, and he's come from the Tilburg Trappers, who in Holland. The Dutch league's always kind of intrigued me, because there seems to be a lot of players from our league either go there or come this way. I know Tilburg are taking on Coventry, I think, pre-season, along with another Dutch team. So I suppose those games will give some sort of indication as to the the comparison between the league. But when it comes to Duché, it seems that he's been put down as a player who's as hard as nails, and he put a hit in to make the play.
Yeah, it seems so. I think the most interesting thing from his record is, well, for me, is that he's been quite successful in his career, and I do really ascribe to the idea that there's players can have a winning mentality, and they don't necessarily have to be the most outstanding player on the team, but you need a certain amount of people that know how to win and that enjoy winning. And he's two trophies to his name already, and it's quite unusual to get players over into the league who have had success behind them. Mm-hmm. I think once players get a taste of some of that success, then it drives them on, and they can maybe lead a bit more by example in the locker room and in the way that they conduct themselves. So it's difficult to know how to compare the Dutch league. I mean, like you say, yeah, there is some movement back and forth. But to be honest, I don't really know that much about the league. Only that it probably struggles as much as our own, and teams go in and out of it, and all the rest of it. So I mean, good production last season, nearly 2 points a game in that league. Which, I mean, if you translate that in even 2/3 of that production, you'd have an outstanding year for the Giants.
I think Duché, if I recall correctly, somebody will be able to tell us. If I have or not, probably not. That Duché was put down by Christensen as one of the front of net specialists that maybe we didn't have last season. And if that's being thought about at the pre-season, then that's always a good thing. And if he is that good, then we'll expect high numbers.
Yeah, we can only hope so. Maybe it would seem to indicate a bit of a change in power play tactics as well, if that is the sort of player that he is. Maybe with a bit more presence in front of the goal whenever we are keeping the puck in the opposition zone. So, I mean, all those questions are yet to be answered, and maybe we'll get a wee clue as to what the strategy is going to be next weekend with the two games. So, I mean, yeah, it's a quick turnaround for the players as well. You know, they've only just really gotten together now, and some of them will still be arriving, and they're just going to have to get straight on the ice and try and play as a team. So,
It's all right for us to try and chat about these players. It's tough to give any sort of indication without actually, having seen them. But in saying that, it's the same every season.
But it does seem to me a bit more this year that the coach has gone out and has gone out with a bit more of a horses for courses attitude, and he is signing role players as opposed to just the best five forwards I can get. Mm-hmm. And then hope that they all blend together, because we've been down that path before with the Giants, where we had all these outstanding players and they all wanted to do it themselves. Whereas this does seem more like there's been more thought put into how the team is going to play and like I say, a horses for courses attitude. So, but that takes time, and I think as usual, once the season starts, I'll reserve judgment until I've seen 10 games and then say nothing more until Christmas. So and it's really around that Christmas period that the team should be clicking into gear.
I think with only three imports left to quickly chat about, the one I'll pick right now is one that seems to be generating a lot of buzz in Adam Keefe. One that Christian believes will be a fan favourite, and a guy who has, well, let's just put it bluntly, is, quote, not afraid to drop the gloves. Not a high point production. Around the quite a high, relatively high penalty minutes, but not as high as I'd expect. But considering the Giants themselves on their Facebook and on their Twitter feeds, whatever, within days of this guy being signed, were posting up videos of him lamping some lads, then I think we know what to expect. Hopefully, according to Christensen, he's not a Sean McMorrow. He's a guy who will provide in the play, but also isn't afraid when a guy like Daryl Lloyd or whatever starts niggling people to answer the bell.
Well, indeed. It's difficult to know how to project his career into a sort of EIHL standards, because he spent quite a lot of it in the IHL.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of points production, I mean, I don't imagine seeing a massive season of goals and assists from him. But you would like to think that someone who's getting, a handful of points a season in the AHL could maybe push that up towards 10 and provide us with slightly more than we've had from some of those big guys in the past. I think that even for a fighter, I'm not really sure that he takes that many penalty minutes.
No, I don't think it's not as high as I'd expect for a guy who.
Yeah, you would be expecting a guy to be well over 200 minutes, I think. But then again, it's difficult to assess because even playing in the AHL, he really hasn't had that many full seasons as such. Mm. So again, you've got to ask questions about how will his body hold up to playing a 60-game season, which I don't think he really. Last season, he had a long season, 71 games. And I think he had 65 the season before that. Oh, well, no, he has. I suppose he has. He has played long seasons, and he's had quite a lot and a lot of sort of 60 game seasons in a row there. So, I look forward to seeing him and to see what he can provide. But I mean, I suppose what immediately comes into my mind when you see a player like that signed is that we do have some players that are known quantity already in this league, like Pelé, who other teams will know immediately. That is the type of player you need to stop, and they'll be out to hit him. And like we said, he's lightweight, so it makes sense to have someone who knows how to protect him. We'll see what he can provide on the ice, but hopefully he's a slightly more smart player than we've had in that position before.
Yeah, I think you and me have been told off by Davey on the podcast before about having a snobbish attitude to players who are in a position of, as he put it, head case to beat somebody. I agree that this guy looks. I think this guy looks like more of a player come fighter than a fighter come player. I'd be quite interested to see the role that he takes on, and I hope that he is more savvy when it comes to being that sort of protection for the small players that somebody like Sean McMorrow wasn't. I'd actually have rated, considering my reaction at the time, I would have put Jason Rushton above the Sean McMorrow, because at least Rushton provided some goals and assists and gave someone on the play, as well as being an absolute nut job. McMorrow in his time didn't add anything. He just, there was entertainment. There was entertainment. I fully admit I was quite entertained at times. But when the chips were down in games, and the games that we were losing had to win, then McMorrow didn't provide anything.
To an extent, it actually wasn't his own fault. Mm. It's just that he wasn't up to that level of ice hockey. And, he was totally a one-trick pony. And there were times where you sort of had to feel sorry for him that, they couldn't put him on the ice in crunch time because he's a total liability. He was out there. I don't think he was a great team player. I think he was out there for himself. Mm. To bolster his own reputation, we knew exactly what we were getting when we signed him.
Yeah.
But I think lessons have been learned from that, and I don't think the Giants will be down that road again of signing a player who is only there to, as soon as the puck is dropped, try to beat somebody up. And I think that Keith will be a different sort of a player. He's not your stats wise. He's. Weight wise, he's big, and I'm sure he can handle himself. But he's only 5'10", which is not the typical scrapper type physique you would expect from these sort of players. But he wouldn't have had that sort of a career in the AHL if he wasn't able to handle himself. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So he could be the sort of the Brad Voth type that we've been waiting for.
And I wonder how the Giants are going to market him with. Wait a minute, AK-47. in Belfast, God love it. dear, I'll not bring up what you were saying to me at the weekend.
No, if anyone wants to know about that, then send us a PM.
One more forward and one more defenseman to chat about. Both were announced at the same time. One was a centerman that was described by Christensen in his interview is an impact player that they were hoping to sign, and that's Brock McBride. He was signed at exactly the same time as Ryan Crane in defence, a guy we know from his days playing for Edinburgh. I think the surprise came here was the fact that the two of them were signed as a 10th and 11th import when the season dressed, we can only have 10 imports. Now we'll come to that point in a second. When it comes to McBride, his stats look quite good. I'm quite in, Right. I was actually looking at his stats the other day as well, and I was quite entertained by the fact that they even have the South Carolina Stingray stats down when he has no games played, no goals scored, no assists, no points, no penalty minutes. It's he was signed, but the guy's got a wealth of AHL experience and ECHL as well as putting up good numbers in the NCAA. What do you think, mate?
Another one of those maybe. I don't know how much of a risk it is, but maybe one of the more kind of you're gambling on what he might be rather than what he is. He bounced around four teams last season. He did his best work with Elmira in the ECHL, where he had over a point a game, but he struggled in his other stints. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if a player bounces around four teams in one season...
Well, that's AHL call-ups, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it's between two franchises as well. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it's not fair to say bounce around four teams, but certainly between two franchises in one season, one of whom he did a lot better for than the other.
Mm-hmm.
In his previous season, he was up and down to the AHL. I mean, he certainly has a potential to be a good player at this level, but we just don't know for certain if he's going to have that sort of production. He had a lot of games in the AHL last season for a player that's going to be playing in the Elite League this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had over 30 games anyway in the AHL, and not that much to show for it, really. So, but again, the sort of player that maybe could come in here, again, the coach reckons he's going to be a fast player and can change the game on any shift, is what Doug says.
Another fast player. It seems to be, are we aiming for a bit of run-and-gun hockey this season? Is speed a big part of Christensen's outlook for the season?
Well, it could be that he's going to try something different. But one of the more exciting seasons we had was a couple of years ago when we had players like Andrew Martin, who were so lightning fast that we just got so many goals on shorthanded shifts.
Mm-hmm.
Just that ability to break away when the other team is set and their defenders are pushed up the ice is invaluable, really, and it can win games. I mean, I think it's more effective, obviously, against the weaker teams in the league. And a good system is a far better policy against the better teams, and so I would like to think that we're not going for all out run and gun hockey, like you say, but that if we can temper it in some sort of way that when we do play on the penalty kill, that we do maybe have those speedy forwards that can get away quickly up the ice and get one on one and one on oh situations.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's one of those sort of players that can do that, but just there's not a lot to go on really from his career so far. Mm-hmm. So I think this is maybe it's a career move for him, a chance to maybe see a lot more ice time, get more time in the puck, and get some stats up, really.
And finally, Ryan Crane. Now, Ryan Crane, you know, played in Edinburgh, played a full season in Edinburgh, and has more or less, you know, bounced about a few teams since then in Denmark, CHL, ECHL, and again, another player has come from the Netherlands. Quite a very experienced player, but again, we'll come back to the point that he's the 11th, and has been put down as the 11th import, and has actually been earmarked by Todd Kellman as being the 11th import as somebody, you know, maybe to keep the other guys on their toes, or a guy who is, you know, more or less there as injury cover. What's your take on this whole 11th import thing, mate? And is Ryan Crane a guy, do you think, will be happy to sit in the stands with his experience? Sit in the stands? Is that a fair? Anyway, sit in the stands with his experience. And hope to get a call up at some point.
Well, we had a good discussion about this when we actually met there on Saturday night, and we sort of got over the ins and outs of it. I think it's great if we can afford it and we can justify the expenditure to have 11 imports. Of course, we should do that, because that's only fair that teams like ourselves that work hard, work extra hard on their marketing and do have that extra cap space. Can have that advantage when it comes to competition over maybe some of the lower payroll teams. So I like the idea of having competition within the squad. We always know that a certain percentage of the players that we sign are going to be injury prone by the very nature. We talked about this in the last podcast, by the very nature of you know, how they become affordable to us.
Mm-hmm.
Is that there has to be some flaw in the better players, there has to be some flaw in their makeup.
Yep.
The thing about Ryan Crane, like you say, he's a total journeyman, and maybe this sort of offer, I mean, he didn't get very much hockey last year, or in the previous season, or in the season before that. I mean, really, you have to go back to when he played for Edinburgh in 2007, for the last time he got over 50 games. Go back to 2002, before he got another season with over 60 games that season. That was playing in the ECHL. So, I mean, I can't say we know very much about his personal history, but maybe this is a guy who suffers from injuries, mm-hmm. That has a lot of upside, is probably cheap. Why not have him in the squad? He's got elite league experience, and we know that he can produce at this level as well. He had a fantastic season for Edinburgh when he was playing for them. So, it's not a gamble to have him in the squad. And the biggest benefit is he can play both ways, which really does give us options if people aren't performing or people get injured.
Yeah, there's been a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth of Belfast bringing in 11th import, most notably from the likes of Cardiff and Nottingham. But I think that Kelman made a really good point in the fact that last season we had 11 imports. So with the same budget, we can bring in 11 imports this season. You know, and if that gives us the added peace of mind before the season even starts of a player who might be able to keep other players on their toes and force them to play better because there might be somebody willing to step into their spot, because Crane can play forward as well as he can play defence, then that adds that added bit of spice to the team. It also provides that injury cover without us having the weight or worry of playing short of imports. I'm wondering whether this will actually put some of the other teams, like St Nottingham, in the same position. Is Corey Nielsen out there now looking for that 11th import because somebody else has got it?
Well, I mean, I don't see how these other teams can complain. They were especially the Panthers can't complain about any rules in the league.
any rules at all?
If you write the rules, you can't,
That's not tripping. We've decided what tripping is.
you can't come back and complain about what's there, you know. And if it's permitted and we have the cap and we can afford it, you know, then why not? It gives us an advantage. We should do it. And the other teams that are complaining, well, you know, it's their problem, really, to be honest. And it might sound controversial, and maybe some fans of other teams that are listening to this will disagree with me. But I think probably another thing that jumps out at me about Ryan Crane is, if you look at all of our other imports that we've signed, nearly every single one of them is 25, 26 relatively inexperienced players. Whereas maybe in previous years, we had the likes of, Jason Ruff around, we had Todd Kelman around, we had Shane Johnson, we had Ed Courtney in seasons. We had players who were in the sort of 35-year-old bracket who were really coming to the end of their careers and could provide leadership for these players. Mm-hmm. So Ryan Crane is definitely the sort of player who will be good to have around the locker room. And I'd say that's maybe what we're paying for as much as, someone to push the other players.
Yeah.
He could come in and work really hard and earn his place. And it would certainly, if I was a Giants player and I'd just been signed overseas, new country, and there was someone else competing for a place that can go both ways, that has a wealth of experience, I think it would really get into my head that I needed to work a bit harder and make sure that I wasn't going to lose my place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And these guys are coming over in the next couple of weeks, and the first game, as we say, is the Hockey Fest against the Nottingham Panthers, two games on Saturday and Sunday, which we'll chat about in a minute. But before we get to that, I had a chance, we're going to chat now with Coventry Blades fan Stuart Coles. I had a chance to chat with him earlier today, and just to chat about his team and the likes and what he thinks of how his team would put together. But I asked him, first of all, that last season the Coventry Blades finished sixth. That was probably the first time in a long time that they hadn't competed for top honours, and asked him his views on how last season went.
I think it was a combination of things. I mean, the club will say that, you know, injuries were bad, and we really were hit with injuries quite a lot last season. But I don't think the mix of players were right. Well, for whatever reason, they just didn't gel on the ice. We had I think the last season they broke the club's winning stretch, like early on, like October, November time. They won something like 15, 16 games in a row, which was a club record, but they weren't playing well at all in those games, and particularly the last couple they sort of stumbled to a win against Dundee at home, and you could tell that the team just wasn't right. I don't think there was enough hard-working character in the team because they had the skills, I think.
You had a great netminder at the back. You know, you had more or less a core of a team that were there previously. But I guess just it was one of those seasons when Tomo just didn't get it right.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised how many. I mean, if you take, they're quite underrated players. But if you take players like Danny Stewart and Tom Watkins out of a side, they're the sort of heart and soul guys, and they're the guys who sort of drive you to victory. I mean, I think Danny Stewart scored an amazing amount of game-winning goals for us over his time.
Yeah,
and the how he penalty kills was just incredible. Really valuable person to have on the penalty kill, and we missed that a lot. We weren't as good special teams, both power play and penalty kill as well, which is another, I guess, Paul Thompson trademark, is that we usually have a very good power play and a pretty decent penalty kill as well, and we didn't have either of those as well. So
the British core still, like, so if a player comes through like Ross Venus was a great player.
Yeah, he was I don't know if he's a good find or just it was just fortunate development, but he looks to be the full package. You know, he's pretty tall. I mean, he's what, just over 6 foot now, and he's just turned 16, 17. But he can score a goal. He's got a decent shot. He scored against Nottingham, which always goes that well. He looks good. I think, you know, he'll need, you know, in a couple of years' time, when he's sort of 18, 19, he'll need to go abroad, like, you know, probably get some development in Canada if he's good enough.
Yeah. And a sixth place finish isn't really what a lot of people expected. How did it go down with the Coventry Blaze faithful?
I'd say badly was an understatement. As the season progressed, there was a lot of negativity around the Sky Dome, and there was almost a sort of conflict between the club and the fans. There was, you know, a couple of times the team got booed off the ice, and in certainly one occasion, rightfully so, because they played like they were so bad. So it's the first time that I'd seen the fans almost turn on the team, because before, you know, Blaze fans in general are quite rose tinted. And Coventry can be at times be sort of the be all and end all of the British hockey world, and I think this past season was maybe a wake up call to some of the fan base. Yeah. That might not be a popular view, but
was it just a case of so much success in the past breeds over egged expectations?
Absolutely, exactly that. I think we'd finished fourth or above in pretty much every season in every league that we played in Coventry, and a couple of the seasons where we finished third or fourth, we were still involved in like cups and playoffs and the like. So there was always sort of like the chance of the trophy, but we crashed this past season. Just gone, crashed out of the Challenge Cup. We were never in it for the league. You know, there was a time where we thought we might even catch Brayhead, and that was sort of all. You know, maybe we'll get to fifth place. And then, you know, we in the playoff quarterfinals, we just, you know, Nottingham had a good team last year, and they dominated us in near enough every game, barring the big fight. We just weren't in the races in any game. We weren't a good team.
Well, putting that behind you, looking at the season to come, I'm just having a quick look at your roster, and the one thing that jumps out at me is that both netminders have been replaced in Tom Murdy and Brent Yeager, with the return of Peter Hirsch, and Brandon Stone's coming into the lineup as well.
Yes, well, Yeager was phenomenal last season. I think he was probably the one outstanding player from the club who could honestly say that he gave absolutely everything and was genuinely successful playing for us last year. And he got an offer. I think he got an offer of contract in Denmark, and you know how it works. You go where the money is.
Yeah.
A lot of players use the UK as a league as a stepping stone into Europe, and you know, good luck to him. He's deserved it after what he went through at some points last season. And Tom Murdy's got a start. He's going to be Swindon's netminder in EPL. So I think Brandon Stones, when he played for Caps last season at the Sky Dome, and I think along that and with some other performances that Tomo's either seen or heard about. He's a good young netminder, and he'll probably do well under the development of Hirsch. Hirsch is a bit of a mixed bag. Some people aren't so happy to have him back. I think he's good to have around. He's pretty solid, 90% or thereabouts save percentage, and he's a character. And as, like I said earlier, though it's characters that we were perhaps missing last year. So that sort of team development and getting the guys as a unit, you know, having someone like him in the team can only help.
Tomo's his knack of retaining players and a lot of getting the cream of some of the players, and another name that bounces out quite a bit is Luke Fulgham and Owen Fussey, who are two standout players. I know Fulgham is somebody who's been the bane of the Belfast Giants, be at the Manchester Phoenix or the Coventry Blaze. They're two good players to retain.
Yeah, they were two absolutely essential signings. I think Fulgham's, even though we struggled last year, Fulgham's still got 70, 80 odd points, and he never really, other than he was partnered with Dan Carlson, and then there was somebody else alongside him. You know, he was never on a consistent line, and he was always putting the goals away. And he's got a good shot. He was seeing that in when he was playing with Manchester, and they've just developed it further. I'll be interested to see how he starts to work with some of the new centres.
Yes.
Because Dan Carlson as a centreman just makes people better. And you can look at the wing, look at Adam Calder's stats and Fulgham's stats. So hopefully Fulgham will show that he's a quality winger in his own right. Fussy, we never saw the best of. He performed exceptionally well, was leading the team in goals and points, and then got a really bad injury and died off at death and never came back for the rest of the season. He was always seen around the Sky Dome, limping around on his crutches, but never quite made it back.
Yeah, you've retained a lot of your Brits, but with the main addition of former Belfast Giants and all the way back from the States is Davey Phillips coming to the lineup. That's a good acquisition.
Yeah, I think so. There's been a... I don't know if you've been keeping up or if you ever bother to read the Blaze forums. I can't imagine it's high on your list of things to do in the day. But
it's either that or I'm laughing at the cage. It's one of the other.
The cage is good for comedy on a Saturday night. David, he's very much, again, split opinion. A lot of people are sort of saying, well, he's a Brit, so how can he be good? He's a bit skinny. Is he going to be able to be that, sort of do the role that we need him to? And from my point of view, let's take nationality out of the equation. He's 6'3". He's been playing in the AHL and ECHL for two seasons. He's got better stats and a better record than Brad Zanon, who, by all accounts, last year was generally accepted to be a pretty solid guy. Mm-hmm. Didn't really make mistakes. So if he can come in and is supposedly better than a guy that we know is a known quantity and already has a working relationship with Paul Thompson, I think he's an excellent signer.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of him and I suppose one of the other ones you had is Rob Farmer, who had his brief appearance over the water. Another decent Brit retained by Tomo to keep a close eye on him for Team GB, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he very nearly made it into the senior squad. I think he was one of the last players that was cut. They were sort of tossing it up into it between. I think it was between it ending up between him and Lakovic in Nottingham. Lakovic is a great young player. It's a shame he plays for them, but. Farmer's great. He's got a surprisingly good shot, but he's another big guy as well. He's like 6'3". He's a big lad, and I think he's only 19, 20, and so he's only going to get improved as well.
So looking at that roster, are you optimistic for the season to come? Or
yes, yeah, I'm certainly more positive than I was at the end of last season.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking if you imagine you sort of say, well, we're maybe not the most attractive destination in the world, and all of a sudden you finish in sixth place and you don't have that lure of playing in the Continental Cup, so players using it as a springboard, you start to wonder how we'll go about recruitment, what players are going to go. We knew we were losing Dan Carlson. There were a lot of questions, but now as the sort of the side shaped up, I'm reasonably positive. I don't think we're going to win the league. I think there are two better teams than us, two standout teams better than us at the moment. But we'll have to wait and see how teams gel. You know, there's all, you know, that sort of cohesiveness that you get from a team. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, and you can never tell until sort of a couple of months in.
So when you look at the league as a whole, who do you see as the big contenders?
I think you guys are, and I think Nottingham are.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the two teams that look good on paper. I think Todd Kelman is backing Doug Christensen incredibly. He said whatever you need, it seems he's, you know, we'll sort it. 11 imports is testament to that.
What's your take on that? On the 11 imports issue, it seems you've split opinion despite a lot of people, you know, everybody having 11 imports last season.
Well, you're only allowed to play 10, so it's more of a question of whether you can keep all 11 imports happy.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of giving them enough ice time so that they're not too worried. I mean, if you have one guy sat for the first 6 weeks of the season doing nothing, he's got 2 weeks' notice. He'll just hand it in and go back to the US. You know, he'll get a spot in North America, because there's no bad imports on that team either. There's no one you look at and you think, actually, you're the guy who's going to sit. You're never going to get. But there, you know, there's a case to put all of them in the team. So I think it's more of an issue for Belfast and the coaching staff more than anything else. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I've long since lost the notion of a wage cap existing in this country. So, you know, teams will spend what they can. And let them get on with it, as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, the alternative of trying to get people to match to some notion of wage cap, it just didn't work. So,
do you think that has a detrimental effect on the league as a whole?
Yeah, I think it does.
We lost the Vipers this season to more or less a reason that they couldn't afford to compete with guys who were spending over the odds, and therefore they were losing a lot of games. That cost the prize to drop, and, you know, and they paid the ultimate price, unfortunately.
I think it does, and I'd much rather everyone played on like some kind of a level playing field,
mm-hmm.
but there needs to be some form of it's more of an institutional change, that we need to move away from, like, the league is effectively run by the clubs, because while that happens, the enforcement of a wage cap is never going to happen. So, you know, until we get to that point, you know, it's a case of you're either going to let them go on their own, or the alternative just isn't workable. So, I mean, let's say in an ideal world, everyone would have a strict budget, and the money would be divvied out, and there'd be properly enforced salary caps, and we'd have 16 teams in the league, and, you know, we'd have a nice, like, a properly British league instead of the North of Coventry League is what we've got at the moment, and Cardiff.
And then looking at the league as a whole again, the Fife Flyers are back in there, and of course that would have been a team that you would have taken on in the days of the BNL, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah. I've been to Fife myself. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderfully intimidating ice rink.
Yeah.
And I only went there once when we were it was actually when we moved to the Elite League and we were playing in the Crossover Cup. But I certainly saw them when they were in the BNL years in Coventry, and big rivals of the team back then. So it'll be nice to see them back in the Skyline for sure. And they've signed Danny Stewart as well, so they'll get a popular reception for a little bit at least.
Mm. And then one more controversial aspect of the Coventry Blaze this season is the rebranding and the new badge.
Yes, the new badge. I really didn't like the old one. I thought the drunk dragon looked like a 6-year-old cartoon scribble.
Yeah.
But it was the identity of the club in the city, and if you put that on, if you put that logo anywhere in town, everyone knew that you meant the ice hockey. So in that way, it was an absolute success. So I can't run it down too much. The new one I think looks better. Certainly looks better on the website. I'll wait to see what it looks like on the shirts, because you know, our shirts, we don't see our shirts until another 10 days or so. But yeah, I like it. It looks a bit more modern and clean. And
it doesn't say Coventry on it, though, does it? It just says Blaze, which is one thing that popped out at me.
I think teams are moving away from... I mean, there's not that many teams now that sort of show their city's affiliation, you know, where they're from, on their logo anymore. I mean, Cardiff Devils, that logo has always been like the devil. It's formed... I mean, the Coventry bit was on the old logo. It was only round, sort of like the top circle, and was kind of obscured by the dragon. So
yeah,
I don't think it was the Coventry bit was as important as the other bits and pieces. I should say that they've said that the old logo is still going to be on the shirt somewhere. They're not ditching it completely. They're using it as a reminder of the past, or some words to that effect.
And how are you guys opening this season then? Have you got pre-season games at your...
Yes, we got a busy old pre-season. We open up. We've got a double header weekend against our B team in Hull. So we're up there on the Saturday, and then they're in the Skydome on the Sunday. We then got a home game midweek against Cardiff. Which is about as far away as a friendly as you're ever going to get in ice hockey. And then the next weekend, we have a tournament with two Dutch teams and Hull. So it's going to be four games.
Fully loaded?
Yeah, four games in the Skydome over 2 days. Hull versus the two Dutch teams, which is Galeen and Tilburg, I think. I can't remember, but two Dutch teams anyway. And then us versus the same two Dutch teams, like, over the two nights.
Oh.
And so pretty busy. And then after that, our first competitive game is the Wednesday after that, because we are away in Nottingham in the Challenge Cup. So no breaks.
You should be ready by then.
I would hope so. The danger is that the guys are going to be absolutely shattered after, I think it's what, five games in 9 days. So
right.
But
well,
it's got to be done.
Okay, well, it's time's ticking away, and the sooner you're ready, I guess, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think previously, sort of, Coventry sides have started quite slowly. We do seem to go down that route. So maybe this is a deliberate effort to try and get them up to speed more quickly, and given the amount of new people in the side as well.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us. As I say to everybody, I'd love to wish you well, but I think you'll understand when I don't.
Yeah, for this season. it's okay. I feel exactly the same.
Thanks, mate.
No problems.
Yep, and thanks to Stuart. He's been on a few times before, and he's always willing to give quite a level-headed view of the Coventry Blaze. Interesting that he's among quite a few people that have put us as at the forefront of this season's title chase.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. It's so difficult to even get a sense of how the Giants are going to be, and then never mind the time you need to put in reading about all the other teams to see how their imports are shaping up, but and get an idea of. It's impossible to see how all these new players that have never met each other before are just going to blend together. But, I mean, certainly looking at Nottingham, I mean, I think they're going to be very strong and very difficult to beat this year. They've got great forwards, got a good goaltender, and, you know, maybe where we're stronger than them, and where we have been stronger than all the other teams in the league in the last couple of seasons is in the British players that we were able to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
And that could ultimately be the difference. So,
we'll get to go up against the Nottingham Panthers, not this weekend, but next weekend, the bank holiday weekend in Hockey Fest. That's been a pre-season games thrown by the Belfast Giants at the Odyssey Arena. It includes a street hockey competition that goes on out in the car park between on the Saturday and the Sunday afternoons, and I've been led to believe there are quite a few other little events and things to go along with this hockey fest. But the key is the two games against the Nottingham Panthers, and probably these two games will earmark, you know, how the season will go between the two of them, because both will want to lay down a marker going into what could be a fight between them all the way to March.
Could be indeed. I'm particularly looking forward to giving some abuse to ex-Giants legend Brandon Benedict.
An interesting spice to the two games.
Yeah, it's very disappointing to see that for. Well, it's strange to see that as well. I mean, I'd love to know. Well, we must ask Todd or Doug the next time that we're speaking to them as to why you see so much movement of these better players now within the league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, surely Benedict is as good as any of the imports we've signed.
Yeah.
So why has he ended up with Nottingham?
Ka-ching.
And well, of course. But if that's the case, then maybe why do we not pay him the money if he's worth it? He's proven that he's good in this year in this league. And maybe it was a choice of the club to and second and third year players are obviously going to cost that wee bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have proven themselves, so maybe it was a conscious decision to save money to have that clear out that we talked about earlier. But it's always disappointing when there's someone who you've cheered for and you've rooted for a couple of seasons and you've done really well and won trophies with your club, then comes up against you, playing for what is, for especially for older Giants fans, are definitely our biggest rival, and most hated rival. But you know, like you want to see other players do. You want to see these players do well in the rest of their career, but obviously not while he's wearing a Panthers shirt. So
I think the one that gutted me the most when he joined the Panthers was Rod Stevens. Couldn't believe it. I was inconsolable when that happened. If Steve Thornton ever went near the Nottingham Panthers, you could forget about it. it will be like we spoke to John O'Billard of the Cats Whiskers blog a couple of weeks ago, and he seems pretty happy about the team that have been put together, and especially with K-Wall coming back for them, probably the best netminder of last season, which is strange considering how frequently Nottingham just go through goaltenders. But yeah, I'm interested to see how this Nottingham team play, because my opinions of Corey Nielsen's coaching techniques and coaching tactics are no secret. I think he's god-awful. You can turn around and you can say he won two trophies last season. I'd actually put those trophies fully at the feet of Rick Strachan, who I think sorted out the defence, which is a bit of a mind F when you consider that that Corey Nielsen is a defenseman, and I think Jono was bringing up that himself the last time. Nielsen's still in a job, and I think he's very lucky to be still in the job. Great player. Can't fault him as a player. As a coach, he's left wanting. He's very arrogant for a guy whose ability does not fulfil the ego. And I'd be interested to see
is his ego writing checks at his body cash?
As a great movie once quoted, his ego's writing checks, his body can't cash. But one of the best movies ever made, and it's not gay. But Nielsen, the Panthers has always have put together what is a great roster, and it's now all down to the fact whether Nielsen and Strachan can turn them into the team that the Panthers fans have wanted, because it was only mid-season that there was a revolt in the stands, despite the fact that the Panthers weren't doing that badly. They just weren't challenging for the league, and all of a sudden it was the end of the world, and in came Strachan to try to steady the ship. And all credit to them, they won two trophies last season, and they've retained a good lot of that team. So when it comes into this hockey fest, I'd like to see us come away with two wins and humiliate the Panthers as much as we possibly can.
Well, so no change from the normal then?
No change from the normal. No.
I wonder, just as a quick question to you, Patrick, do you think that maybe there are too many, how can we put this, alpha dogs, as that's the word Bill Simmons likes to use about the basketballers. Are there too many alpha dogs on the Nottingham team this year in terms of their forwards? Are there too many guys that sort of want to be the man? And do you think that will be to their detriment?
Is that necessarily bad? I see what you mean. You've got DAB, who is an incredible shot. You've got Benedict and Harima, which, again, two players last season who were standout. You've got your favourite player, David Clark.
Who is David Clark?
You've got your favourite player, David Clark, who, again, one of the top shooting Brits. Yeah, I think there are quite a few players. But with a lot of the players who were the big egos maybe gone as well, especially, you know, Jade Galbraith, gone. That's a big hit for them. That's the sort of creative player. And I'd be interested to see who the creative player, the standout superstar is. Because as much as I hated Jade Galbraith, you can't, and who's now gone to the Brayhead clan, I believe, you can't fault Galbraith's skill and what he brought and the production that he brought to the Nottingham Panthers. Now,
and his career highlight was in a Giants uniform as well.
I have to say that is quite entertaining. But you have to look at that roster now and think to yourself, who's providing that role? Who is stepping into the Jade Galbraith role? Who's going to eat all those pies that have been left over and basically create for the... they'll save a lot of money on pizza. But maybe that can go into the 11th import. But I think it's... I'd be interested to see who the replacement for Galbraith is and if they can have that creative player to provide for... Because Benedict, as good as he is, and he can put the puck in the net as a centre, but... Is he as creative as Jade Galbraith? I thought so initially. I'm not so sure. I wasn't so sure last season. Of course, he hasn't played a full season in the Elite League, is another point.
Well, this is it. I don't know how they're going to balance their lines. When I look at all that forward talent that they do have, I just wonder how they're going to make cohesive lines, because I think there are too many players that are going to want the puck on offense every time and are going to want to shoot the puck. And when you get that in a team, it breeds a lot of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'll make the analogy with basketball that you get into this situation where the offense, like maybe with the Miami Heat this year, where you have two players that are outstanding in their own right,
mm-hmm.
who basically, once things don't start going for them, they go into this, right, I'll have a go, then next time you get a go mentality and forget about the team set.
Yeah.
So now I'm not trying to say that players like David Beauregard and Benedict are massive egos, which I mean, I've no evidence as to that, but I think sometimes skilled offensive players who are much better than the other players in the team can sometimes fall into that trap. And I wonder, will there just maybe be a wee bit of implosion after a few weeks in the Panthers lineup? But you know, I could be tempting fate here. They could be the most cohesive team in the history of the league, so we'll have to wait and see.
As part of our reach out into social networking, I'm trying to reach the three people that listen to the podcast. I put on our Twitter page earlier today asking for three words to describe the Nottingham Panthers. We got quite a few interesting ones back. I think I'll start with Nev Suter. The infamous Nev Suter, we all know, is with Dirty, Dirty Panthers, which is what you expect from Giants fans. The quite a few 1956s being thrown in. Always the Bridesmaid, coming there from Paddywhack 41. Panther 3709 said, entertaining, awesomeness, which I don't think is a word, and frustrating. Is awesomeness a word? No.
No, it's not.
No, it's not a word. Sorry. So I'm not accepting that. Paula Reed with Ickle Pussycats. Karen WJ with frustrating, entertaining and tenacious. Obviously a Panthers fans there. Jono came on actually, he was on a couple of weeks saying rarely fulfilled potential, which is one that's quite fair. And I can't let Kev Pope's not go in with sexy Nielsen hockey.
And three simple ones to hopefully put that to bed. We'll never forget.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's good. Oh, but we can't put that on a banner unless it's official merchandise. if you want to get on to follow us on our social networks, on Twitter it's at AVFTB. I'm just looking at it, I have to read it. AVFTB is the initialized A View from the Bridge. We've just joined Facebook, so there's a Facebook page. You can look up A View from the Bridge on Facebook. It should pop up, and we'll put in some news on there about podcasts and interviews and asking a few questions that we'll be reading out your answers to on the podcast. You can also email us at podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. Anything else, buddy?
No, I think that's it. That's probably bored the listeners, all seven of them, for long enough now. And I think probably something to listen out for if you are following the podcast over the course of the season is, as we've come back full of youthful enthusiasm for the podcast and we're talking and talking about all these players, you see the length of the podcast diminishes as the season goes on.
And vanish all together.
Yeah, but, and once we're out of the league hunt by Christmas, you know.
If you haven't heard it, last week's interview with Doug Christensen, I heartily recommend that. He's very frank and very honest about his opinions on how he put the team together. It's well worth a listen. There'll be another interview next week. So myself and Connor will be with you again in two weeks.
Am I invited to this one?
No, not next week.
Sorry, this is the Paddy solo effort again.
Enough of this. You can't bring up solo effort. We'll get complaints. It's a family show. So there'll be another interview next week. And then me and Connor will be back with you in 2 weeks' time to chat about
some hockey to report on.
Well, actual hockey, I know. I'm going to get home for at least a Sunday game of Hockey Fest, and maybe have a few interviews and a few words recorded at Hockey Fest to share with you all.
For Giants fans, only 2 weeks before we can start moaning about the horrible imports we've signed and how the coach doesn't know what he's doing and how the power play sucks and the GM's lost the plot. And
hooray!
And this is your outlet, A View from the Bridge.
Hooray.
So get in
view
touch
the bridge
with
us. www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. We'll be with you again, as I say, next week for the interview, 2 weeks' time for me and Connor. And until then, we'll see you next time here on A View from the Bridge.
It's not